Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 212. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Michael Kaplan.
You can find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram. You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can find Kaplan at Cap in America on Instagram. This show's at Lost in America Pod on Instagram, on Patreon. This is the most important one, Kaplan.
Yes.
We do this show, Lost in America, every week, every Monday. But if you want to get us three extra times a week for our full throttle comedy podcast about life in quarantine, go to patreon.com/Lost in America. That is where you get the show live from the bunker. That's me and Kaplan 3 days a week talking about life in quarantine. For $5 a month, you get that show. $5 a month. You get three extra shows a week and you feel good about yourself. You're a philanthropist. You're, what do they call people who buy expensive arts but don't know what to do with it, Kaplan?
Rich people.
You're a rich person.
People who are like laundering money.
Yeah, you're giving to people like us who need it.
Launder your money to us. If you've made a lot of money this year.
Yeah, exactly.
The stimulus bill was just passed. You're getting that big fat $600 check. Send it to us.
For $5 a month, you get that. For $10 a month, you get all those episodes plus a Lost in America t-shirt. Kaplan, hold up the mug.
This is the mug. This you have to pay extra for, but this is the same emblem that's on the t-shirt. Number one in Armenia, baby.
As you all remember, we famously went to number one in Armenia, not just in the comedy podcast market. We went to number one comedy podcast. We beat Mark Maron. We beat Joe Rogan. We beat Bill Burr. Who else has a podcast, Kaplan? Name anyone.
Name our competitors, but you can. We beat them all. Every single podcast that there exists was behind us in that chart.
Yeah, for that week. And so to commemorate that, we made t-shirts for $10 a month. You get that t-shirt, plus you get this pod, and plus you get the
live. We have a new Patreon, don't we?
And our new subscriber, shout out to Pascal Hauser. He was a good friend of mine out in China. He's from Germany, I believe Austria, Kaplan.
Oh,
hold the phone on the jokes.
Okay.
He's from Austria.
Austria, I've heard it's a fine place. A lot of good people.
There's great people in Austria. So thank you, Pascal, for joining. And thank you to everyone. We're at 50 Patreon subscribers right now, Kaplan.
A bell should go off for number 50.
He should get something. Like when you're people, we would give him something extra for free for that. But we're not, sadly.
No, nothing.
So, but we have said this. We're now at $307 a month on Patreon. We have said that once we get to $400 a month, we will throw an annual party in New York City for all of our Patreon subscribers and probably blow the entire year's worth of money.
Yeah,
it's a bad deal for us.
It's going to be a rager. We don't care what the COVID rules are. The second we hit 400, we're throwing a party. If we have to do it in like a speakeasy, I now that I have the antibodies, somebody learned about on the Patreon show, people are telling me all of a sudden where speakeasies are in New York. I'm starting to learn. So we might throw one at one of them, but we're going to throw a party for you Patreons at some point. $400
somewhere in New York.
$93
City.
Away.
Let's get to today's episode, Kaplan. We have the great Ollie Horn rejoining us because Brexit has happened.
It's over. Well, that's going to be my first question. Has it happened? Because we saw some articles. We started reading some articles and it seemed like there was a deal, but we were confused because it didn't seem like there was enough fanfare. You know, they didn't seem like
not in the United States. Yeah, that's why I had to ask you, Cap. I said, has this happened yet? Because, you know, it's 5 years of buildup. And then in the U.S., it was like third, fourth page news that Brexit happened. And I went, did it even happen? Or does no one, do Americans, have we just grown bored with the whole idea? And so it's not really making the news?
Yeah, I think there was just fatigue. It's like they had made a lot of jokes about Brexit and Trump and everything and comments. And then all of a sudden it was like, it's been 4 years. We're sick of it. We're mainstream media tuned it out. So we're done. That's why the people come to us for the real news. So we're going to break it down.
It did happen. We found out it happened. Yeah. So that's our first bit of research we did.
Found out it happened.
And then what I'm going to do, Ollie's going to come in a second. I want to go through all of the bullet points of what happened. And it's like, you know, good, the bad, and the ugly. That's an old movie.
We're going to break it down, right?
John Wayne or one of them. But this is good, the bad, and the indifferent. What ended up good for UK? What ended up bad? And what's like, who cares? It's the same thing.
Because we want to give, you know, we received some criticism last time. They said we were like shills for the leavers, right? Or the remainers. So we got some negative feedback last time from people who said we didn't give enough for the other side. So we want to find out. There must be something good in this deal. Boris Johnson, ace negotiator. I'm sure there's some good stuff.
Yeah, the Boris heads in the UK hate us now.
Yes.
After that last one with Ollie. So Ollie Horn, you're great. I want to give you a proper introduction. Great stand-up comedian, currently in Malaysia, but tours the world doing comedy. And Pig in Japan was this fantastic show he ran for a while. I'm sure he has new shows coming out. Ollie, welcome back to the show.
Yes, that's right. I'm sure I've got new shows coming out. Surely 11 months in lockdown would have written me a new show. It's good to be back. Really good to be back. I find it really interesting that you said that there's no fanfare in America, because there was a lot of fanfare in the UK, right? Like there was a picture on the front page of a major newspaper of Boris Johnson dressed as Santa with a Brexit deal, delivering a Brexit deal to his people. And so I find it really, I find it fascinating when us Brits celebrate things, because I think what defined Britain, right, like 100 years ago, is we'd let other people do the celebrating for us, right? Like we told the world how brilliant Britain was, and like we were just exporting empire flags as much.
Sounds
as
like
we
us
possibly
now,
could.
Yeah,
right, exactly. And so like I think what was good about Britain is, even up to about 10 years ago, Britain always did some stuff pretty well. Like I look back to things like the Olympics opening ceremony, which was just like an incredible spectacle. It was great. And it had Mr. Bean in it, and anything that has Mr. Bean in it is good.
Right? It's a win.
Yeah. But even then, like people in Britain were like, it's a bit shit though, isn't it? Or it's likely to be a bit shit. Or maybe it was, you know, and like, what I liked about Britain is that we often did stuff well sometimes, but we would always downplay it and go, we're a bit rubbish. Yes. Now the exact opposite is happening, where we are demonstrably shit, but we've now had to switch gear and go, but we're brilliant.
Talk it up.
Yeah.
So is that what happened? What's the temperature in the UK? Are people Well, also we should say that the Christmas that he delivered this gift to the UK on Christmas Eve, did he not?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Which firstly shows this really did go down to the wire, and anyone that was saying like this is bluffing, you know, the fact that they're like, you know, pretending to hold out to the last minute to get some kind of victory. Everyone that I follow who kind of knows about this stuff, has reported that it really could have gone either way. There really could have been a no deal, and they had to work really hard to make sure there wasn't, because no deal would have been a catastrophe. And for all of your listeners that were cross about the fact that I said that the Brexit was a bad idea, I think I made the point more clearly that not having any kind of deal, completely severing our ties, right? Like, you know, literally cutting off our arms would have been a bad idea.
Would have been the worst idea.
That would have been
the deadline
worst
again?
Idea.
Remind us, it was the end of the year?
It was January 1st.
January 1st, right?
I believe.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
down to the wire.
It really was down to the wire. And actually, like, it kind of still is down to the wire, because it still needs ratification. At the time of recording, which is 28th of December, we have just heard the news that all the EU member states have agreed to the deal, which is interesting because I thought individual member states didn't have sovereignty to decide on things. But, you know,
every country in the EU had to somehow agree.
Yeah, of course. And they all had a veto on basically everything. And, you know, this is the mad thing about the EU. One thing that's been quite good about these last few months is it's particularly during the pandemic is it's shone a spotlight on quite how much sovereignty individual member states have. Like when for example, Boris Johnson did a U-turn on the lockdown for Christmas. So previously, Boris Johnson said, I'm not going to cancel Christmas. I mean, I really think he fancies himself as Father Christmas. There's been a lot of Father Christmas imagery. Previously, when he said, I'm not going to cancel Christmas, everyone can go home for 5 days.
Somehow
presuming the virus won't find out, or I don't know, he thought he could pull some strings. And then 3 days before he made his U-turn, even saying to the leader of the opposition, Keir Starmer, you want to cancel Christmas, but I'm going to let Christmas happen. He then did a U-turn when it was explained to him that unlike a Brexit deal, you can't do a last minute negotiation with coronavirus. It's not going to turn away. And so then they had to come up with a reason, right, as to why they did a U-turn, which wasn't just we came up with a bad policy and now we would like to not do that bad policy anymore. So they pushed. And this narrative was really hard. They pushed the "there's a mutant virus," right? But what
is it not true?
We not have a mutant virus. Oh,
it is. But we've known about this. We've known about this mutant virus. This mutant virus since October, and apparently it might have entered the UK via Malaysia. Is one thing.
Oh boy!
I know. So, anyway, they pushed that there and then, and I'm not sure whether it was pure ironic retaliation, but at that point, the rest of the world decided to remind the UK that we can still hear you, right? Like we can still speak English. And France locked its borders for 2 days on the basis that we don't want to let this mutant virus in. And then
Japan just locked its borders.
Canada.
Yeah, I know.
The city of New York, we're locking our borders. I don't know if you've heard it. Our governor.
Exactly. But I feel like it's that scene from Alan Partridge where Alan is worried because he's going to get in trouble for something. And he says to his girlfriend, but Sonia, I'll end up in jail. And then his girlfriend goes, but you told me that jail is like a holiday camp with PlayStations. He's like, yeah, I was making a different point then. And it feels like that with the UK, that like, they thought, right, quick, let's be reactionary, lockdown because of the mutant virus. And then France goes, all right, fine, we're going to lock our borders, which is so ironic because then it meant that there were 2 days of lorry drivers, you know, kind of backed up. And it is somewhat kind of beautiful, chaotic imagery that it's almost like a perfect mirror image of the opposite of the Brexit campaign. That, you know, the most inflammatory part of the Brexit campaign for me was that there was a picture which Nigel Farage, the leader of UKIP, stood in front of just a load of miscellaneous non-white people, right? and with some caption basically saying, look, they're all coming in. The Brexit that we saw just 2 days before Christmas was like 50,000 lorry drivers outside Kent all shitting in their vans. We should say that
first of all, to all, I know, because we have such good audio over here, people might think we're in the same room. You are in Malaysia. We have to assure our audience because people are scared of the British right now because of your mutant virus. So you're not in the United States. You're not in the United States.
Oh yeah, yeah. It doesn't travel through Zoom. And I could be clear. Yeah, well, I could have gone back to the UK. So the last time we spoke, I genuinely was kind of stuck. But there was a brief period between the kind of the two lockdowns here where there were quite a few commercial flights available. But at that point, like just Britain became virus island, and so I decided
Malaysia's safer.
Malaysia's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, and it's partly because people are just being compliant with mask usage, I think. And, you know, whatever people say about whether masks are effective or not, the fact that everyone wears them shows, like, at least demonstrates that people are taking it seriously. Right. Yes. Like that might not be the reason, but it definitely shows that people are taking this somewhat seriously. There are still plenty of cases, but very, very few deaths. And, you know, I've just never been into an eating establishment where they haven't checked my temperature, made me give my phone numbering for contact tracing, and where I haven't been kicked out for abusing a buffet. Little joke. we haven't done any jokes yet.
Okay.
Brexit. Let's get back to Brexit. Get to the buffet later in a pandemic.
He's wanted in 10 on 7 continents for abusing
buffets.
He's
the one who coughed. He's not telling us. He coughed on the buffet. The person who ate it got on a plane back to England and spread that whole mutant virus all over the place. But anyway.
Even Antarctica, they're looking for him.
Yeah.
All right. So back to Brexit. So first of all, I want to say to our listeners, if we're talking about Brexit right now and you don't know anything about it, go back and listen to episode 200 with Ollie Horn, where we do he explains the full hour of what Brexit is. Now that you've listened to that with the miracle of time, let's start here. I want to go through let's start with trade. And I want you to tell me bullet point by bullet point, if this is good, if this is bad, if this means nothing to the UK. We're starting with trade. There will be no extra charges on goods. So no taxes, I guess, or tariffs. There will be no extra charges on goods or limits to the amount that can be traded between the UK and the EU starting on January 1st. So what does that mean? And what is that good or bad?
Well, that's good. That's a really good thing. And that has been so good while we've had that for the entirety of our membership of the EU.
So it's kind of indifferent in the sense that it's not anything. It's not a bonus for the UK.
No,
it's not what they already had. Yeah.
No. And I think it's worth saying this. I know you want to kind of crack on and do these bullet points, but there will be people that don't really have the context of what this nitty gritty is about. Right.
Sure.
Basically, the UK wasn't a founding member of the EU, right? The EU existed before the UK joined. And the UK joined later, but was instrumental in deciding a lot of the EU's direction on certain things. And one thing that can be said for Britain's involvement in the EU was it did care about the human rights and social stuff, making sure that all the European countries sign up to the European Convention on Human Rights and, labor standards, that kind of thing. But generally, the UK was really keen on this idea of a single market. This idea that if you sell to another country, there isn't, the so-called red tape. And what that really means is layers of bureaucracy. So having to fill out forms or that country making sure that your goods don't have equal treatment in their country. And that happens in two ways. One with tariffs, right? Which is, like you said, it is kind of a tax. It's basically saying, look, if you want to sell your car in our country, we're going to make sure that consumers pay an extra 10% to protect our local car manufacturers.
Yes.
Or also things that are called non-tariff barriers. And non-tariff barriers are things like not acknowledging a professional qualification. So let's say I'm an accountant and I have a degree in accountancy and a professional qualification in in Bulgaria, and I want to go and do some work in Hungary for some international project. Hungary will recognize my qualification, right? So on the basis of that, there's no barrier for me to be able to do my trade. Non-tariff barriers can also be things like we require that a certain food stuff is packaged a certain way for safety, or we require, there's all sorts of things, right? And so basically, the thing that was concerning about this trade deal was, the thing that people were concerned about if this wasn't to happen was, all of this, two things. One, if Britain were to suddenly change its alignment, let's say if Britain were to suddenly change its standards on things like product safety or things like, or anything really, then it would be really difficult for people to trade between the EU and the UK. But that was never actually going to be a concern because Britain basically never said what it would do outside the EU other than this nebulous, we're going to strike new trade deals. And striking new trade deals with other countries around the world might mean different standards, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. The main concern, right, the thing why people were really worried about this kind of up against the line thing was there are certain things which the UK was really tightly intertwined with the EU. And so it was really, really important that there was a quick deal. Stuff like aviation, right, can planes land or, sharing of data of criminals or stuff like stuff like we talked about, right? Can goods go in without a tariff? That the problem for that is not so much an economic one, but it's also an immediately practical one, right? Just having a lorry slow down and handing over a form takes an extra 5 minutes.
Can I ask what's a lorry?
Yeah, he's used that word a few times. I don't
you know what a lorry is? It's a truck.
A truck. Oh, a truck. I thought you meant like a taxi. Sorry.
I thought it was like a police officer.
The trucks. Let's go back.
It's a truck.
Okay.
Makes sense. Okay, got it.
Okay, well, I thought I was dumbing things down by giving this explanation. Let's
you cannot. You cannot over dumb things down for us. Let me tell you that right now.
Well, I must say, I find it really funny that I find it really funny that I'm on this because I haven't read this trade deal, obviously. No. Right? No one has. And whether anyone that claims to have read it is lying to you, right?
So well, that's 1,200 yeah, exactly. pages.
But yeah. I figured it's an American podcast, you know, exactly. When in Rome.
Well, let's get to the next one here. So this is because it's along the lines with that. We're still on trade here. So there's extra checks at borders, like safety checks, customs declaration checks, businesses. So therefore, businesses that rely on transporting goods to and from the EU need to. It kind of is just like you need to know what you're doing. There's the laws are going to be different, but so you need to check what they are. Is as far as
yes. I mean that's broadly true. So again, this is kind of another irony of the whole situation that on the UK government's website there was a countdown timer, which said like 6 days to Brexit. Are you ready? And you clicked on it, and it didn't tell you anything that you had to do to get ready.
Yeah,
because
okay. I've been reading that exact thing over and over, and I'm like, why aren't they mentioning what I need to get ready for?
Because no one knew. No one knew. Okay. I mean, okay, I'll give you.
It's just like a party that we're not going to give you details. So cool.
I think it might be helpful to give a couple of like specifics, right? And I can only really talk about the world which I know. And so I would guess intellectual property law is quite boring. So let's talk about if you're a traveling comedian, right?
Okay.
Like before
that's
Brexit,
the most important thing in the deal, I'm sure.
That's the most important thing. And I'm surprised that there has not been more representation for for comedians that work cash in hand and don't mind traveling on mega buses to dodgy European cities.
It's insulting.
Where's my representation in this deal? I was genuinely considering if there wasn't a pandemic doing a Brexit farewell tour and doing all member states
after the other.
It would have been funny, but again, I can't do it. So me as a UK citizen, the only passport I have is British. If I go to France now, because there is not an extra agreement on, you know, freelance musicians or you know, whatever category I would fall under, I'm not allowed to work in France without a work permit.
Oh, right? No.
And so even if I go for a day to do one gig, which earns me like 200 euros, right, the venue wouldn't legally be allowed to pay me. And there's basically no way around that without some kind of agreement. And that's also true for people like obviously comedians are a bit of an edge case, but you can see why you might want to send some member of your team to another European country to do some work, right?
Yeah. Let's stick with the example of the comedian. So
yeah, right. So right now I and actually this happened to me, by the way, the last time the clock was ticking down, I was due to be doing a show in Paris and they said, look, I'm really sorry, man, but because we just don't know what, like if you're still going to be in the EU at the time, or if it's going to be part of the extension, whatever, it's better to leave it. So like I've lost work because of this.
And now going forward, they won't be allowed to pay you, correct?
Well, no permit ahead of time.
I'd have to get a working permit, and these things will be cost prohibitive, right?
Sure.
So, you know, the unit economics for bringing over a low tier comedian such as Ollie Horn means that it's not viable. But also, right, it's not just that. It's stuff like if I want to film my show and I want to bring semi-professional camera equipment, I need what's called a carnet, right? A carnet is basically like a visa for goods, because say there would otherwise be some tariffs in order to bring goods into the country, right? Like, you know, like paying VAT, let's say.
Yeah.
You need to prove that you bought these things in the country of origin and you plan to bring them back again. So what you do is you get a thing called a carnet, which lists all the equipment that you have. You show that when you go through customs. Then when you go back home, they check that you've got all the equipment which you said you have and you haven't secretly sold it.
Sure.
You know, undercutting. So stuff like that, you know, that's another practical thing where I'm sure one day they'll sort this stuff out, but right now it's not being sorted. And so, you know, practically, it's good that all of this big stuff has been rolled over. And, you know, if you're a small merchant, if you've got like a Shopify store and you're selling stuff, you won't notice much of a difference post January the 1st. You can still send stuff And arguably you're more incentivized to do so because the pound has been weakened over this whole process. But what we haven't got, and this is really important to mention up front, what we haven't got is everything we were promised during the referendum. And your listeners, which said that I was maybe a bit negative in the last episode.
I don't listen to them.
Yeah. Well, I think they have a point, right? That I definitely was pro Remain, partly because I am sold on the vision as the Leavers claimed, which was, why should we be discriminatory and only allow immigration from these 20 or 30 member states? Why can't we open Britain up to the world? Right. You know, that's actually a very powerful case for that kind of reasoning. Right. And I do think that there is in a parallel universe, executed by competent people, a version of Brexit, which is good. Right, which, you know, takes all the best things of the EU and spreads it around the world. And if Britain still has imperial ambitions, and it seems it still does, then why don't we kind of bring free trade rather than opium this time? So on that basis, you know, there's definitely a case. However, it's really important to say that the promise is such as we would get a better deal than we currently have. Right. Or, you know, there will be even more opportunities for trade. That was bollocks at the time. And it's been bollocks. Proven to be bollocks. Yeah.
Ollie, let's keep going through some of these bullet points.
Let's prove how it's bollocks.
Because I think a lot of our listeners might not understand the nuances. But if we get to just the specifics, they'll be on board.
So, obviously, I'm trying to avoid the specifics. I think you can understand my strategy now, which, by the way, seems to be the British negotiating strategy during the EU negotiations.
All right. So here's a big one that's pretty simple to understand. It seems like a big time loss. There will no longer be automatic recognition of professional qualifications between the UK and the EU, such as doctors, nurses, architects. So if you're a doctor and you're
great, you don't have to do work.
You're British. And then you go to France, you're no longer a doctor.
Someone has a heart attack, you don't have to do anything now. You can let them be.
Well, yes. Well, arguably, with the number of sick people the UK currently has, this might be a blessing in disguise. it might be a good thing to keep all British doctors in the UK. But yeah, but this is just what we were talking about, right? Recognition of the professional qualifications. It's not saying that it can't happen. It's just saying that each member state can now, you know, decide its own rules.
Each country decides on its own.
Yeah.
To answer the question quickly, I would say this is a bad thing. However, it should be noted that it doesn't affect that many people, right? Okay. But the people that it does affect, it is going to be a bit of a
Yeah. Good point. Okay.
And then if you're a doctor in Hungary or something, sorry, you come in and then you're not a doctor in England anymore. You're a Kesty cab driver. So that's
great. We have a sponsor to get to, everybody.
Oh, yes.
So the sponsor. Ollie, here's the question. Do you want to do this ad read with us?
Yeah. Okay.
Or you don't have to. We can.
No, I know how hard podcasting is. I support you guys.
No, it's not supporting us. It's supporting the genius of Magic Spoon.
What's Magic Spoon? Oh,
Magic Spoon.
I've seen
everybody.
YouTubers. I've seen YouTubers advertise Magic Spoon.
No,
it's the most delicious grain-free cereal I've ever eaten.
Thank you. Exactly.
Here's the thing. That's true. It's true all except for the fact that some other you can get it any. You can't get it from YouTubers. You can only get it from us.
Oh, yes. And when I want 11 grams of protein with my breakfast, I will always choose Magic Spoon.
Not only 11 grams of protein, zero sugar, only three. But let's start from the beginning here. All right. So here's the deal. Kaplan, Ollie, I know Kaplan, when Kaplan grew up, you know, his family was the family that would just give him any kind of sugar or cereal he wanted, you know, and that's why he ended up as he did.
That's why I had a heart attack at age 41.
That's why he had a heart attack at age 41.
I'm going to file a lawsuit against my parents for that, being raised that way. But my kids are not going to have a heart attack. Yeah,
I was not allowed to do this, and we had to eat. So we just had to eat that gross, bland cereal. There's finally a cereal that does both, Ollie.
Oh, thank you.
It's finally a middle ground.
Yeah, it tastes like all the sugary cereals you had as a kid. They have the flavors. They have blueberry. They have cocoa. They have fruity.
I just tried fruity today for the first time, and it's outstanding.
But enough about your love life. Talk about your cereal.
Fruity is my wife's favorite. My niece is eating it downstairs. She asked if she could have some. I said, yes, you can have some, only if you go home and force your dad to buy it for you. Yeah, and how do you buy it? Everyone wants to know. You go to magicspoon.com/lost, L-O-S-T. You put in lost at the checkout as the promo code. You get free shipping. And more importantly, it supports this show. That's yeah. what's most important. For the and first,
do we get a, do I get a discount if I use the coupon code LOST?
Yeah, you get free shipping.
Free shipping is a discount because
shipping is not is not cheap free. In the United States.
It costs a lot of labor. Yeah. You get yeah, a box. Absolutely. You get a box in the mail. You can use that. Reuse that box or something.
There's a
else.
UPS guy. You know, sometimes he involved. Loses a lot involved. We also have a friend who works for Amazon. He ordered Magic Spoon from us. He said it came quicker than any Amazon product he's ever bought.
Amazon, yeah, Amazon could learn a thing or two from Magic Spoon. And exactly. you mentioned your niece is eating it. I have been using. My kids love the blueberry flavor. I'm using it like an allowance, like the way you give dog treats to get your dog to sit. To, yes. I say, you guys want some of this? I ration it off. Clean your room. Here you go. Here's 10. Here's 10 pebbles. So that's Kaplan, that, it's that
just,
tasty.
Just for the benefit of the people that are watching on YouTube, can you show us your box again, please? Kaplan is so in love with Magic Spoon. He is eating it from the top of the box. Yes. He's just taken one big bite like he's a monster.
Now, there's one thing I learned, Kaplan, for a second. There's one thing I learned is you have to be the one talking when you hold it up so the camera will focus on you. So here's my box. I have blueberry. This is for the people watching at home. Kaplan, what are you holding?
So here's mine. I got the Frosty. And yeah, it tastes, I could smell the sweetness. So I just like ripped it open the way a dog would rip open a box of like chicken, rotisserie chicken or something. The way it just smells so tasty to me.
Can I ask you a question?
Went right in.
I don't like eating cereal in the morning that has more than 3 grams of net carbs. Do you have any, do you have any options for me?
Well, this is exactly what it is. It's zero sugar. Zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, only 3 net carbs. It is keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free for all you soy people out there.
I got the math here. It's 10 carbs, but minus 1 gram per fiber, minus 6 grams of allulose. And that
Kaplan,
gets
I wasn't even
carbs.
Done yet. Shut up. It's low carb and it's GMO free. Ooh, how about that? MagicSpoon.com/lost. Put lost to checkout. We say you buy your first box of Magic Spoon for us, for the podcast. So you're contributing so we can stay on the air. But you buy your second box for you.
Yeah. And you buy a third for your heart. So your kids and your kids' heart. So they won't have heart attacks at age 41 like I did. And you're not having one because you ate healthy growing up. So.
Exactly. Now let's get now we have one last ad to get to, then we'll be back with the show. Cap, let's play the ad. All right, we're back. That is it now. Ollie, let's keep going. We're talking about travel. I want to move on to wait, did we already talk about travel? We haven't talked about travel. Okay, so here's a big one.
Can I just drop in something? I know it's not fashionable to recommend things that James Corden has done, but before James Corden moved to the US, he made a sketch show with a guy called Alex Horn, and they have an advert, a fake advert of an American product, where they just, the only thing they'd say about the product is it has zero Aspinall. There is no Aspinall in this product as a parody of like, and that's all I could think about during that entire advert. Read.
We will say that next week. Zero Aspinall.
Can you just, so can you make sure that next week you just drop in that there's no Aspinall? Aspinall's a made up thing. This should be on YouTube and it is worth watching. There is no Aspinall. We have removed the Aspinall.
Not only will we do that, but I should also say, Cap, we're the most transparent podcast there is out there. So we should say that so many people, this is only our second time advertising Magic Spoon. So many of our listeners, because the best listeners on earth, bought it the first time that Magic Spoon has already bought more ads on our show going forward. So please keep it going. Ka-ching, do it for ka-ching. Us. We've been doing this show for 4 years and this is the first ad we've ever had, paying ad we've ever had. So thank you.
Well, we held out. We had a lot of offers, but we waited for the right product. So good.
You wanted to make sure the products had no Aspinall in, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. We
held out for
products were just full of Aspinall.
You don't want to kill our audience.
All right. Back to Brexit. Okay. Here's a big one. EU, so this is travel. EU pet passports will no longer be valid. How about
that? That's huge for me as a dog owner.
Complete pain in the ass. So that's another thing you can do. And this kind of goes back to this idea of like an assumed set of standards. So what most of the EU is about, right, is there not being, there being this element of trust, that we trust that one country is going to fill out its, is going to fill out its safety declaration once, right? And that country's going to monitor that. And then all the other countries agree, right?
Sure.
And it's true for vets too, right? Like we trust that each member state's vet are going to be looking after the animals properly, trust they're going to vaccinate them properly, trust that they're going to be safe. And therefore there's no need to replicate that work again and again and again, right? And So yeah, if you own a dog and you want to take it on holiday to France, you need to go through additional paperwork or kill it.
But isn't that a little good... or kill it?
That feels get someone to watch it for a week. I mean, so that
I think you gotta kill it.
I mean, the French. You don't want the French coming into your country with their dogs. They don't pick up their poop. Have you ever been to Paris? So this is a huge win for. This is a great win by Boris Johnson.
And that's just the owners.
Yes.
UK, so that seems like indifferent, I guess, or barking. bad to indifferent, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, or I guess you could call it like a negotiation failure. Like, I think rather than saying good or bad, because I think like no one agrees on a trade deal if it's going to be like really, really bad, right? Like what tends to happen is it's like you've met your negotiating criteria or you've exceeded them. And this is an example where like they could have, if they had time, they might have negotiated this kind of thing. Maybe the UK has some grand plan where they're going to deviate on EU standards. I can't think how. But yeah, so I mean, this is the kind of thing which is like, it's a shame it's not being done. But as you've already noticed, as you mentioned before we started recording, it seems like a lot of this treaty, I mean, this treaty calls itself a framework, by the way. The word framework is written in the first couple of pages quite a few times. It basically is saying, look, we're not done yet. Like, you know, yeah. this is exactly like when you're taking an exam at school and you leave yourself a note to kind of come back to a question for all the questions.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it's what I respect about it. Cause I used to do this. I remember when I have like a deadline in college and it'd be like, you're up against deadline and you have to write this many pages of like a screenplay. And I would just leave blank, like insert joke here. Like, this is where I'm coming back for a joke, but like,
yeah,
I got nothing. So they got nothing, as we were saying, a lot of spots are just going to kick the can down the road.
Yes. And they've also done like, they kind of set up a lot of committees as well. So like, there's going to be like committees that meet to decide on certain standards. Also, there's going to be certain reviews. So like the Boris Johnson was a bit disingenuous when he said in 5 years time, we can fish all the fish we want. I'm sure fish is on your list. So I'll just preempt.
Yeah, wait, hold that. We'll get to the fish in a minute, but go ahead.
But yeah, so basically there's kind of options for things to be reviewed. There's gaps for things to be filled in. And so in 2026, which is when there's kind of an opportunity for renewal, it's possible, if there was political will, for this trade and cooperation agreement to be the vehicle through which the UK rejoins the single market.
Wait, what is the single market? That just means the EU?
Well, the single market is... No, it's fine. The single market is what the EU calls its kind of like economic policies.
The trade
which
part.
Is yeah. Its trade part. Yeah. So it's basically like the single market is all of the rules and agreements that allow you to freely exchange your goods and services, right, without any barriers at all. And okay, so what I'm suggesting is it seems that there are so many kind of open ends and loose ends to this trade and cooperation agreement, so much to be decided and so much that's up for grabs in 2026, that in theory, this could be a vehicle for more divergence, which is what Boris Johnson is saying, right? But in reality, it could also be a vehicle for more convergence back to something similar to what the UK has
5 years from now.
When different prime minister's problem, though. So
all right, let's keep going.
Exactly. The classic British response of just kicking that tin can down the alley.
All right. So I'm just going to go through all the travel stuff at once so we can get through it all. UK nationals will need a visa for stay of longer than 90 days in the EU in a 180-day period. That just seems like that's what we would probably need as well. Like,
that's just bad.
Yeah, you're just being considered a foreigner at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Extra border checks for UK travelers. I don't know.
But by the way, that is kind of double bad because like some countries have really strict rules about whether you're allowed to like co-inhabit and stuff. So like in the UK, for example, if you want to become, if you marry someone who's not from the UK or not from the EU, then you need to prove that you've got a certain salary in order for them to get a visa. Like America doesn't have this. That's why you have 90-day fiancé, where anyone who like lives in their mother's cupboard can bring their foreign spouse to the country to get the green card, right? That's what you call it, isn't it? Mm. Whereas some countries don't have those kind of lax rules. And so this, like, this really will mean that, like, there's a generation of people that can't have, like, a fit foreign girlfriend.
You can't have a green, green card weddings aren't going to happen now. Like, that's
end of an era.
Not unless you've got money, I suppose. Yeah.
If you're a dorky guy, that's sometimes the best way to, like, have a little fun for a few months.
Well, it's getting even worse here. Here's the next one. UK and EU will cooperate on fair and transparent rates for international mobile roaming, but there's nothing stopping. Basically, if you go now, if British people now go into other parts of Europe, your roaming phones, your mobile phone plan, the rates could just go through the roof on roaming. Whereas it used to be local.
And this was, this was so good. Like this, you know, this meant that like you could use your UK data plan anywhere in Europe. So I remember going to like Barcelona and like just tethering on my phone, just rinsing it. And there's nothing they could do. And but what this didn't do right is it wasn't like there was a complete market. Like the EU like still allows member states to be somewhat protectionist. So what you couldn't do right is just buy a German cell phone plan and use that in the UK the whole time.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like a perfect free market. It's like there were still some restrictions. But yeah, this is bad. And also there are some people who live in the border of the UK by the coast, the part closer to France. And I remember as a kid, there was always news reports of when phone masts got stronger, you know, like when we moved to 3G,
yes.
Their phone would flip from the local British network and the French masts would be stronger. And so every now and again, their phone would flip. They'd receive one text message and it would cost them like £4.
Okay.
And I remember this being a perpetual news story, which was then solved by the EU rules on roaming. So it's like they never actually fixed the fact that the French kind of towers was stronger or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know.
But isn't this a good
like
thing?
Like their cheese.
This is going to make British people who travel more present. You won't be able to be on your phones the whole time. Girls, you can hit on British girls because they can't be just doing everything. They got to like.
Well, actually, we've created a problem and also solved it because we've also made it harder to travel as well. Yeah, so it's not like you can. It's not like you can be in the EU for so long. You'll rack up a huge bill.
Right, you got to be checking on your dog because you couldn't bring your dog with you. So yeah.
Exactly. All the problems are actually solved.
All right, here's a good one. British travelers will still be able to access emergency health care in the EU, but is that good or is that just what you also had before?
That's what they had, right?
Yes, it's what you had before. So we have this thing called the European Health Insurance Card, which is only available for tourists. And I didn't realize this actually. When I was studying abroad in France, oh yes, we've now found out why he's so pro-EU. When I was studying abroad in France, I thought I could use that, but actually I had to pay for the hospital when I cut my hand on Valentine's Day. Not related, but memorable because... because the nurse that dealt with me was like really, really, really beautiful. And I thought, man, should I just shoot my shot?
There it is. Misconnection. She's listening now, I'm sure.
What a Valentine's Day story. But in order to have this card, you also need to have private health insurance. But it's just a way of like making things just a bit quicker and a bit easier. So yeah, I mean, it's a win. It's a good thing. But if you were traveling, you'd have private health insurance anyway.
But you had it before. All right, here's a big win, I think. UK will no. Now we're getting into the meat of it. New UK will no longer be bound by EU courts. Good or bad?
Yes. Well, this is a big thing for someone that cares about the idea of sovereignty. So sovereignty is a word that's never been used as much, I think, in the last 2 or 3 years. What people think sovereignty means is a country being in control of its own laws, right? That's kind of what the word has become. Like, what does sovereignty mean? Well, it means that only British laws are made by British people in the British Parliament, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And any kind of foreign influence on British law is seen as undermining of sovereignty. Now, I take quite a different view of what sovereignty is. I take a more kind of practical view, which is what I learned at law school, which is you get like sovereignty is the recognition that that a country is able to make international agreements. So what this means is like, you know, in international law, there's a test for statehood. Like, what is a state? If you want to claim to be a state, what do you have to have? Well, you need to have firstly some degree of territorial control, right? Is the government actually to a greater or lesser extent in charge of its citizens? Do they listen to them, or has there been a military coup and do they listen to the military leader instead?
Yes.
So not only do you need to have kind of like some kind of internal control, there's also this idea that the country can be outward looking, right? And is able to make agreements with other countries. Because what that does is that means that other countries are acknowledging that you are a sovereign state and able to make an agreement, right? So it's a bit circular, but basically, for me, sovereignty is the ability for a country to make agreements with other countries. And so the making of other agreements the making of agreements with other countries is, for me, is like a show of having more sovereignty, right? Like you've got this big international web of things which prove your independent statehood. But so basically, the European Court of Justice was a court which basically decided on when there was something where we were unsure what EU law said about something. The EU Court of Justice would interpret that law. But it's really, really, really important to not overstate the case. Generally speaking, and there are some exceptions which are not really worth going into, but generally speaking, the European Court of Justice was there to advise local courts. So what would happen is, right, there would be a question. So let's say something really simple, like a question of law regarding product safety. There would be a dispute in a UK court, right? And the judge would say, look, this actually uses some EU law, right? This is not just this is not just British law, but EU law. It's really important that EU law is applied uniformly across the whole of the market, right? Britain can't have its own interpretation of EU law. France have a separate interpretation of EU law. Spain have a separate, because then you can't predict anything, right? Then you can't know what the law tells you to do. So what they do is they will send a question to the European Court of Justice. The European Court of Justice will not look at the facts. They won't decide who wins the case. What they'll say is, well, based on these assumed facts, we would interpret the law this way. And then that judgment is then used by all the other member states. They would then send that answer back to the court in the UK in this example, and the UK would apply that. So there was never ever a question that the European Court of Justice was higher than the UK Supreme Court.
It was, right? It was suggesting and advising, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly. And of course, the UK court would have to be very, very brave to go against what the justices advise, right?
They'd so this is very, kind very of a nothing indeed. Then.
Well, yes and no, because on the one hand, it was good that the UK had representation in this court. So Britain was actually quite instrumental in the European Court of Justice, although it was in, which country is it in? It's not Switzerland, it's Luxembourg. So although the court is in Luxembourg and it uses lots of different languages, English was used a lot. And there was a post called the Advocate General, I think it was the Advocate General, one of the two, who would advise the court. And there was loads of British people that did that job. And so, like, when you think about the movement of EU jurisprudence, you know, looking at stuff like human rights, like what does a family mean? These kind of like big questions, the UK had quite a lot of influence on the court. Now what's going to happen is we don't have any judges in the court. There's going to be less influence of British law in the court, but we're still going to have to follow the judgments, because if the EU decide, well, we're going to interpret our statutes this way, and Britain now as a vessel state, as a third party to the EU, says, well, we would like to trade on your terms still. You know, we'd like to use this agreement we've struck in order to stay trading on your terms, right? We still need to kind of follow what the court says, but we have less say in it. It's less of a win than we think. It's less of a win than people might think.
Call a tie.
Got it. Okay, let's get to the fishing, because this is something I'm sure there's a lot of background if we could do it as quick as possible, but we're running out of time here. But from what I've read, the UK...
Experience has showed us that going right up to the bone time-wise will result in a better podcast. Exactly. I'm just using the UK negotiator's tactic of running things up to the wire. The final 10 minutes of this is going to be gold.
We're hoping to finish it by Christmas Eve. Okay, so fishing. From what I understand, I'm going to explain what I understand, and you can tell me where I'm off here. But it seems as if the EU was allowed to fish in UK waters. The UK is allowed to fish in EU waters previously. And that seemed to be a big point of contention for British people who want Brexit to happen, because they thought that the EU was fishing too much in their waters. Am I right?
Got the best fish, obviously.
Okay. So then what they negotiated now is that for the next 5.5 years, the UK, EU boats are still allowed to fish in UK waters, but for the next 5.5 years, the UK gets 25% of whatever they catch in dollar amounts or in pound amounts, whatever it might be. And then after that, in 5.5 years from now, they have to renegotiate again. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, so basically, that there are, it actually breaks it down according to fish. And I've read that there are 87 species of fish which are subject to this kind of EU-UK quota, right? And this year, the UK gets 33.6% of that fish stock, right? Which they're allowed to fish. This is obviously done for environmental reasons, right? To stop overfishing. In 2026, so after this, that share will rise to 35.9 or something percent. So
from 33 to 39?
From 33 to 35, so it's like a 2% or 2.5% increase in amount of fish that we get. So I think there's two reasons why this is a big issue. Firstly, fish is something we can kind of understand, right? So like all the other stuff which we've attempted to talk about is like really esoteric, whereas fish, it's like they're taking our fish. Like we can see our fish.
No, I read a quote that said it's not about fish; it's about freedom from one of the negotiators.
Exactly. And there was all this like proper jingoistic stuff of like one of the press briefings was there are four Navy vessels ready to arrest French fishing boats absolutely stupid.
So but, what's that 25% thing I read then?
I don't know that figure. And honestly, I don't think it matters because fishing is such a small industry for a start, right? It's a tiny industry compared to like financial services, which, let's be clear, there's still no agreement on, right? So like one of the main things that we need an agreement on, this idea of passporting. So like, can financial products be moved easily across the union? Cannot be done. Terrible. Fish is such a small issue, but for some reason people have really got behind it. Secondly, and I find this really funny, we're not even eating the fish we're catching, right? British people don't like most of the fish. We eat cod and that is not available.
Haddock
if cod's not there, and then whatever fish is in the filet fish, right? Those are the only three fish.
Fish and chips are just fried fish. That's what you're known for. It's
exactly.
The so McFilet.
Exactly. So any fish which is nice when it's fried, we'll eat. So most of this fish is exported anyway. So that's why, you know, when it's like you get the 25% of the fish back, that is we just get the money for that fish. Right, like,
you don't want the fish.
All the Scottish salmon you're catching, you could export to America. We eat all the that's our thing.
I think most Scottish salmon is actually exported. Fish has just become one of these politicized issues, and this apparently was one of the stumbling blocks. The thing which really got Johnson in a twist, and the thing which made a deal nearly not happen, was this idea of kind of. It's very hard to explain, but like it seems that it was about the keeping of standards. So like the extent to which the EU is going to lock the UK into certain standards if it still wants access to its market. The reason being is the EU is very worried that the UK might quickly diverge its standards or lower its taxes in order to kind of be like the Singapore of Europe is what people were saying, right? You know, a much lower tax regime, much more internationally competitive. And then the EU wanted a mechanism by which to say, well, we're going to get compensated for that. If you want to make those changes, that's fine. But now we need to kind of rebalance the seesaw. Fish apparently was also one of these stumbling block issues. But I think Johnson realized that he just needed to not lose this issue, right? You know, he just needed the people that cared about Brexit. People were saying Brexit's going to be brilliant. There are these sunny uplands. It's going to be the easiest deal to strike. When all that didn't happen, they then had to change their tune to, well, we're not going to lose much. And the thing that they really did not want to lose, because it's something that you can kind of visualize and see, is fish.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, I think he started at like 80% and then it's like, but he got something. So it's he counts as a win.
Exactly. So, you might say that this was a bit of a red herring.
Yeah. Okay. It's okay. But it does seem to be the one that gets the most press, which is probably, I guess, by design. Here's the last thing. And then
just because fish have really good PR.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone knows fish.
Here's an. This one everyone seems like an fish. Issue. The UK will no longer participate in the Erasmus exchange program, which seems to be. Is this the idea that if you grow up in the UK, you can go to any university in the EU without having to pay a higher fee than the local students? Would that be the idea?
And it's,
and now
it's
that is off. Right.
Oh man, and so this is something Oxford. Which I think. Well, this is something which I think is actually like genuinely short-sighted. Genuinely, is the word myopic? Is that the right word? Myopic.
Myopic. Yeah, maybe.
I want to use.
You guys got your own language. I don't know what you're saying.
I want to use.
I don't know. Yeah, half these words. I'm not sure.
It's really words.
I want to use an intelligent word. That's what I mean. Yeah, lacking. Yeah, that's what my outfit means. Basically, this is the most. This is the saddest of all the kind of wins. This, I think, right, was made on economic grounds, because what the Erasmus scheme basically says is, you don't have to. I did the Erasmus scheme, for what it's worth. So I went and studied in a French university for a year and didn't pay them anything. Like, didn't pay tuition fees at all. That was covered by someone. And I also got some money as well. I'm not sure where.
How. When you say you didn't pay tuition fees, that's because you got a scholarship, or literally because you're British, so no one pays?
Because of the Erasmus scheme, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And honestly, the Erasmus scheme is
quite a scheme.
I do think it changed my life, because but for going on that exchange year, I probably wouldn't be stuck in Malaysia now, right? Like, it really showed me.
You wouldn't be on this podcast right now. This has changed our lives.
Exactly. So these your listeners have a lot to thank. In fact, Magic Spoon needs to thank Erasmus, because Magic Spoon is making bank off what I learned while in Paris. Yeah, so
they should maybe pay for this going forward.
Magic Spoon is the real winner. Basically, the Erasmus scheme is very, very good. And Magic Spoon. Don't mean to say Magic Spoon. Erasmus, right, is not just about student mobility, but it's also about funding programs for, you know, university research. It's about making it easy for a professor to do a visiting lectureship, etc. Why I think this is sad. And it's true that generally Britain spent more on Erasmus than it was getting back in terms of the movement of students. More foreign students or more EU nationals were coming to the UK and benefiting from the program, but the other way around. But, right, that just suggests that more could be done to encourage British students to go and take advantage of it. And the thing that I think is, the reason why I think this is very short-sighted is, one of the things that Britain does still have in now limited quantities, I think, is soft power. And I think about all the people which I met on the program who, you know, all the people that studied at my university because of Erasmus, or all the people that did one term of Erasmus in another European country, but one of their terms in the UK. Like, it just creates this like generation of people who are fond of the UK, who speak good enough English to work professionally, yeah, and who, like, obviously when you're 20, all you care about is banging these people.
Yes.
But 10 years on, they become your professional network, right? Those that haven't blocked.
I got good news for you. We can replace those Europeans that were coming in with more American study abroad kids.
That's what I was going to say.
This is the win for us.
They're the worst. The Americans were the worst. They didn't get invited to summer Erasmus parties because they're awful.
Kaplan and my brother studied in England. So they were the two worst. But it's a win for us, because we get more jolly Brits, maybe.
Yeah, you guys should come to America, too.
America. Yeah. Man,
you should study abroad here.
We'll call it the Trump program.
Yeah. I do think it's really sad. And what Britain has said is, oh, we're gonna set up our own scheme. But that's not really the point, right? The point is I think I mentioned before, like, I met my Hungarian ex as part of this scheme.
Her often.
Hungarian ex-accountant.
No, we have a lot to thank Erasmus for.
If they want to make a deal on this with the US, I would shy away from calling it a scheme.
Yes.
that usually just sounds like you're taking advantage of someone.
Yeah, that's probably the problem with this whole issue.
So final word here. Fish. What would you say, what's the best thing that happened for the UK, and what's the worst?
If I'm being a bit sneaky, right? I think that all of the talk of divergence of standards and striking up these new, hugely different trade deals, etc., I don't think there's the political appetite there. I don't think it's going to happen. I think what's more likely, right, if we just look at the general trajectory of international trade, everything's converging, right? There's ultimately going to be kind of one standard, one ground floor, which every country in the world ends up meeting, apart from China, right? That's basically what's going to happen. And so, and actually, you know, China is going to have an even bigger influence on what these standards are, as is, you know, Brazil and India, etc. So my feeling is, the fact this agreement has happened, and the fact that there's definitely a generation of people who don't understand Brexit. And I know that because I talk to my grandfather on the phone quite regularly. And he's shout out. I think he's a Magic Spoon. I think he's already a Magic Spoon subscriber. So I don't think the coupon code's any use. He genuinely doesn't understand any of the issues. Like, I don't mean that. Like, he's otherwise a smart guy, but he just like where he gets his news from isn't explaining this in any other terms than we won our fish, right? Or like we didn't give away more fish.
Well, here's a question. So,
and so my feeling is, yeah. Sorry, just finish that point. My feeling is a lot of people think Brexit's done now. And this vehicle is a way for us to very calmly and very adultly rejoin some of these important programs, such as like the sharing of criminal fingerprints. For some reason now we don't want them anymore.
Yeah. Right?
So like stuff like that. I think eventually this is a mechanism for that to happen slowly and gradually. But so much damage has already been done, and so much political trust has been lost on the basis that people were promised something which absolutely could not have been delivered. And yes, this, I do think, for all Boris Johnson's faults, this is probably the best that he could have done, even given his 80 seat majority, right? That, because the EU just aren't going to budge. The EU aren't going to undermine the integrity of the single market.
That's what I was going to ask. If it was just like big picture, it's a good deal, but in the sense that it was worse than no deal, obviously, and better than no deal, and better than what the worst fears were when this all started 4 years ago.
Yes, but this is still, don't forget, a hard Brexit. And something which I think is very easy to forget is we cannot let those which were in charge of the Brexit campaign, and also other campaigns such as Nigel Farage's campaign, who were at the time saying, why can't we be more like Norway? You know, Norway is kind of on the outer circle of the EU. They still have lots of their own freedoms, but they're still members of the single market, etc. And so the thing that we were kind of originally promised is that the UK would have what at the time was called a soft Brexit. You know, this idea that we formally leave the institutions, the European Court of Justice doesn't have the same reach. There isn't direct effect of EU laws. We talked about that last time, this idea that a law kind of passes through Parliament without any local parliamentary scrutiny and just automatically becomes law because we trust Brussels lawmakers, all that kind of stuff. And I think the option was always there for that. Like, if Brexit was handled differently, that there's a parallel universe where that could have happened, right? If David Cameron didn't resign so quickly, if we didn't use Article 50 as our mechanism, which gave this kind of ticking time bomb, and if there wasn't just a series of conservative elections which continued until such time as there was a big enough majority to pass this through without any opposition, then we could have had, you know, this idea of a soft Brexit. And then actually, if I were batting for those that wanted divergence, that's what I would say. I'd say, well, let's just get ourselves on the outside, then slowly diverge bit by bit. Because once you have an amazing trade deal with America, right, you know, already negotiated to say, look, we're going to have all these lower tariffs, it's going to be fantastic, it's not very easy to persuade Parliament.
You have leverage.
Yeah, exactly, to diverge even more. And so the thing that's kind of lamentable is I do have a lot of respect for people that decided that Brexit was the right thing. There's a libertarian argument for Brexit. There's a left-wing argument for Brexit. There's also a right-wing argument for Brexit. And there's a lot of smart people that think that Brexit's a good idea. And what's sad is even those people can't really see this as a victory.
Yeah, that's kind of my final question, which is, I think the parallel we drew in 2016-15 to the United States was the Trump people wanted foreigners were taking their jobs.
Build our wall. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that was part of it early on in the UK as well, is we need to stop these people from coming in and taking our blue collar jobs. Does this accomplish that?
Absolutely not. I actually wanted to, in order to prepare for this, I didn't read the treaty because I'm not a nerd. And
good.
Magic Spoon aren't paying enough.
Yeah. But, you read the Magic Spoon ingredients to prepare for this interview.
And remember, I did.
But what I did do was look back at kind of Question Time episodes from 2015 and 2016. And there was so much vitriol that was created, particularly, I must say, by Nigel Farage. And there's a really, really, really sad episode, clip I saw on YouTube today, of a guy that was, I mean, clearly he had a hard life. Like he was homeless, he claimed, right? And he was talking about how he didn't have a job. And he said, I've applied for 100 jobs on the railway. And at that point, you did feel like there should be an intervention, like apply for different jobs. Maybe the railway's not for
your resumes needs to be cleaned up a little bit, your CV.
Exactly. Maybe saying having completed Thomas the Tank box set is not enough. Anyway, like, we can belittle the guy all we want, but clearly he was in a tough spot.
Yeah,
and actually there was one quite funny thing, which was the panelist, after he gave a little bit of a racist diatribe, he felt very threatened by it, so left the studio, went, well, I've got to go find a house now, which made it seem like he went out house hunting but made a diversion via the Question Time studio. But anyway, the point is, he said something which could only be a product of this campaign, which is I went to go and get job seekers allowance or, you know, whatever tax credits he could get or whatever government support he could get. And an immigrant told me that I had to find a job. And there was a very much kind of an us versus them mentality. And this guy was blaming the wrong people. He clearly had a tough life and like someone needed to help him. No question yes. about it. Right. And no one said to him, in fact, one person did say you're blaming the wrong people, but Nigel Farage, who was there, was basically goading this kind of attitude. And yeah. what I feel is, you know, this doesn't create more opportunity for the working class who have been completely let down by the last 10 years of Tory austerity, where access to education has been cut. You know, like for many people, right, going for free to a European university could literally be life-changing. Like there's a comedian I follow on Twitter who said that without Erasmus, I wouldn't have the job that I have now. He's a German translator. He came from a low-income background. And so this is definitely, you know, if you're a small business owner, if you want to start a business in the UK, it's slightly harder now to trade. So the thing that I think is really upsetting is for all the kind of the really smart people that wanted Brexit because there was this big international plan, that now can't happen because of this deal. And for all the people that wanted to blame foreigners, well, yes, the free movement of people has now stopped. But you can bet your bottom dollar we are going to be handing out visas like you hand out coupon codes for Magic Spoon.
The only thing this is good for immediately. The only thing this is good for is like the dogs, the British dogs at the Greyhound track. They don't have to worry about the French dogs coming in.
Oh, those fast German dogs. They don't have to worry about those super Aryan dogs.
Beyond that, yeah, it seems like nothing. Ollie, thank you so much, man. Thanks for taking the time. Thank you for being patient with us, with these our dumb Americans.
Thank you for not doing any reading the deal, because then you would have come off. You came off so much smarter than us already. But if you read the deal, my God, we would be ashamed just to leave the interview. So thank you for
that. Thank you for just memorizing our, we should tell our audience, we didn't tell you who our sponsor was in advance. You knew they had 3 grams of net carbs off the top of your head.
That's what you get with a flavorful and tasty. And look how cool the boxes are.
That's an Oxford education right there. Ollie, that's it. Thank you so much. You can check out Ollie.
My Twitter is Ollie Horn Tweets.
Ollie Horn
Sometimes
Tweets.
I post about law stuff if you're interested in that.
Fantastic. And you have great jokes on there too. Patreon.com/LostInAmerica. $5 a month gets 3 extra episodes. That's it. Cap, what should we do?
I'm going to go. It's lunchtime around these parts. I'm going to eat some Magic Spoon. I'm going to get lost.
In fact, just before we go, can I tell you the latest thing I tweeted?
Yes.
Sure. Which is, as the Christmas dust settles this year, let us take a moment to remember all the reasons that made Jesus of Nazareth the greatest American that ever lived.
Hey!
Well done.
I love that tweet. I saw it recently. Yeah, that's great. That's it. Ollie, thank you. Kaplan, let's get lost.
Get lost.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.